The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informal look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, peteevans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Stanton, thank you so much for joining us. How are you, brother?
I am so, 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 so honored to be here.
Me too. Really, really beautiful to connect with you. And it's interesting. I was going through my shirt collection this morning, and we've just moved house, and you uncover so many things that you thought you'd lost. And this is one of my favorite shirts of all time, and it says, "Know thy butcher." And not only do I love just the simple message that conveys, but it's actually a beautiful shirt. It's a shirt hoodie, so it's I feel like Mr. Robot sometimes when I wear it. But what I think we should change this to, this slogan, is "Know thy doctor," and I feel like you can take us down some amazing rabbit holes about that message and how important it is to know your doctor, and because you are a doctor, and I'd love to for you to take us on that journey, my friend.
You know, I think we just got done with an amazing event here in San Diego. It was our Heart of Freedom 3. And one of the things that I said from the stage was that the only sustainable model of healthcare, and if you have a doctor who isn't trying to work him or herself out of a job by making themselves obsolete in your world, then it just is another form of what we have today, right? We're shown with a deep magnifying glass today what's essential, what's not essential, and many people just realize, like, is my doctor essential? Like these elective procedures, blah, 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 all these things. And they realize that a lot of it could just shed away. And they recognize maybe how much sovereignty they actually had. And I would say that knowing thy doctor, maybe flipping that, is that your doctor better know you, right? Your doctor better know and have an invested interest in not just your thing, your label, your symptom, your drug, your prescription, or whatever. Maybe actually know who you are. Maybe actually know you down to your soul level And in our practice, we have a ton of kids and a ton of families, and we see them through this process of, you know, prenatal chiropractic care, where families are literally blossoming in our practice. And we know babies before, we know and meet babies before their earth side. And I would say that that is a deep rooted sense of who we are as practitioners in our office, that we care not only about all the things that any other doctor would, but we go much deeper in understanding, you know, the soul of people, so that we can actually help them essentially express the vibrancy that they're made from. You know, it's a little different than what's culturally accepted.
I think a little different or a lot different is what we need right now.
And I don't like to use the word
need or short or good or bad. Mm-hmm. But
totally.
Perhaps the exploration of these concepts. And it's so beautiful that you say that. I've been fortunate enough to be a father of two amazing, amazing human beings, two girls that are becoming adults. One, my oldest, Chili, is nearly 17. She's driving now. And my youngest one is 15 and a half. And both of them are so, so beautifully independent and switched on for their age. And people say to me,
yeah,
it's interesting because people say, geez, they've turned out really well. Geez, Pete, they've turned out to be good kids, good, good kids, you know. And I just hearing that from strangers, I mean, it's not validation, but what you were just saying about the doctor knowing a child prior, well, I had the same experience, whereas my chiropractor that I used to see, he knew the mother of our children, and he was working with her and myself pre-pregnancy, during pregnancy, and then as soon as the children were born, pretty much within the first 6 months to a year, they were already seeing him, and they've continued to see him over the last 16, 17 years. And what I find fascinating is one of the modalities he practices, apart from just basic, I shouldn't say basic chiropractic, but I'll use it as the term here, because once you have your chiropractic degree, you can specialize in so many different modalities and multiple of them as well. So apart from the physical attributes of the chiropractic adjustment or therapy, he was one of the leaders in neuroemotional technique, or NET. And
awesome.
And it's, I look back now and some of the earlier day issues that they had to go through with emotional, I guess, awareness and understanding and repatterning. Let's just take one basic example, public speaking. Both of the girls had issues with public speaking during their primary school years. And he took them through a therapeutic process, non-invasive, very gentle, and something that the kids could understand when they were 9, 10, or 11 years of age. And both of them, one ended up becoming the school captain, one ended up becoming the vice captain. And the reason how they did that was to public speak after a session with him. And it was just one session. And I always wonder just how different the kids would have turned out without seeing a chiropractor every 3 to 6 months. I mean, it wasn't religious that we did it. It was just, as kids, you don't really need to go too often. But how different perhaps they might have turned out without somebody knowing them and knowing their body and even helping those children know themselves through their body and through their belief patterns. So sorry, I took a big chunk of our interview time just then to explain that, but I think it's very, very important.
No, I would say that has been, if you look at, like, literally on my shelf right here, I have some of the oldest chiropractic textbooks that exist, right? And there was envisioning and talk of a utopia, you know, and that, you know, the fear of public speaking, sure, right? That's a big, big fear societally, right? But that one event is a small thing, right? It's a small occurrence, a blip on the radar, right? But if somebody in your world has some intention, has a potential process or envisioning of what's potentially possible for your child, and they transcend that, and they recognize, wow, like there's something that I was here, and then now I'm like elevated into this higher expression of what my innate inborn potential is, and then they express that and they live it out as kids. Like what is possible for the world as a result of that? Like we would always say, like in our old books, that subluxation, a misalignment, is a small thing. The fall on the sidewalk that maybe led to that is a small thing. That adjustment isn't really a big thing either, but that adjustment to the person in that moment in transcending potentially where they were to what they could be over and over and over, like we would say, for that person is a small thing, but for a community, a city, a state, a country, a globe, if they recognize their inborn deepest potential, like where would we be today, right? It would be a completely different world than we find as, quote, normal today. And I think that's just essentially, if there was something that I could share, it's like that, I believe at the root of all providers who are outside of convention, outside of what's acceptable, outside of the pharmacological diagnosis, treatment, pharmaceutical product or surgical procedure that, you know, is founded in a potentially poor mindset or maybe destructive, maybe the one of the most destructive on the planet in making people believe that not only that they don't heal, right? Not only that they don't heal themselves, but that maybe you're genetically programmed for errors, right? Maybe you're genetic, like it's just a matter of time before your genetic predisposition of your inheritance, that you're part of some unlucky sperm or egg club. That is where we are today, right? Where we are here today in the world, conventionally, in normie land, because somebody convinced you that you're broken and that you're made broken. And that all it takes is a bug, all it takes is a gene, all it takes is a random occurrence for you to down spiral into what is probably your destiny anyways, which is some sort of laundry list of compendium of all the diagnoses that are out there and labels. And in our world, we're like, man, this just flies completely in the face of what's actually real. Like everything that you've talked about, like I've thought about this a lot, Pete, like watching you, literally be like the third person that was removed off of Instagram. like it's like Robert F. Kennedy, Del Bigtree, Chef Pete Evans. And like you could look and be like, Chef, like why a chef? But
I think I was first, actually.
Oh. Were you first? Oh, I'm sorry to demote you. But it's like you sit back there and you're like, in our model, you are one of the most important human beings on the planet because you will re-engage us to our relationship, not only with food and our meals and our choices, but potentially like our entire ecosystem of how humanity and the human species and the human race, that if we don't restore that relationship with our ecosystem and what's in alignment, what's out of alignment, what we should have as essential to our innate makeup and genetic, I always call it a genetic expectation. Our wiring is that we are wired to expect certain things from our environment that if we don't have, then we will then express disease and illness and some sort of disconnection in that regard. And I was just, I feel like I'm interviewing you now. I apologize because I do have a podcast myself, but it's one of those things for me. It's like, I just wanted to honor you for that. Because I think many people in your position would have never made that connection. And you've become, for me, a beacon where I can actually look to a chef, somebody who has this, like for not just information, but literally to understand a landscape and a lens of the world that is completely missing. it's completely missing to re-engage us back to our ecosystem and our relationship symbiosis with not only other species, other plant lives, and other aspects of things that only someone like you could, right? And I think that's what healthcare is also.
I appreciate that, mate. I really do. And I promise you I wasn't doing it to be anything other than expressing my authenticness. And it wasn't even a choice. And then when that happened, for instance, I was like, oh, okay, well, that's obviously part of this process. And part of me is like, oh, I've just lost a large chunk of, I love being an entrepreneur. I love creating businesses. I love manifesting and bringing ideas to reality. And if they can help people, then so be it. Yeah. But it's not really my driving force. My driving force isn't to help others, and I've said this before, and people think, what do you mean you don't do it to help others? I said, well, if that's the byproduct of what I do, fantastic. But I can't base my decisions about what I think is going to happen for other people. I said, I have to base my decisions about what flows for me and what will be after that. I have to let go of. I can't have any expectation. It's like this interview today. I don't know whether one person's going to listen to it or a million. And if I have to actually think about that, and it's so fascinating, and I'll just say this because I've interviewed some of the most beautiful people in the world, some of the most famous, most in-demand speakers. And even last night, my wife said, can you ask one of your guests that you had on this question? Can we email him? Because I really want to understand something. I said, sure. And this was 9 o'clock last night. And this morning, woke up at 6 a.m. and I looked at the emails and he'd responded. And I have this wonderful relationship with people and doctors around the world where they respond usually within 24 hours. Like it's nearly a given. I don't even have to think about it. But I've attempted to get lots of different speakers onto this platform as well to interview. And one of the questions that a lot of them may ask or have asked is, how many people will see this? What's your demographic? I go, I have fucking no idea. Like, what does that matter to you? Like, well, I understand they don't want to waste their time with something that's not going to go anywhere. But it's like, really, what if your marker was 10,000 people and I had 9,999? What would you do? Like, it's this. So I have to let go of that as well. When people go, I'm like, it's not the right time for that connection to happen. So I do thank you for this. Oh, please go.
No, I was just going to say that ties in exactly also to maybe my model of healthcare or service or doctors or anything like that, is that it's an inside out model. It's an inside out thing. It's I need to be, like you said, in flow, in alignment, in the highest expression of who I am in that moment. Maybe even, and I got this from an amazing interview that I just got, where I was just like, this doctor told me that I go into every encounter as if it's the last time I'll see that person. And I'm going to communicate with a level of truth and conviction and compassion, the thing that will hopefully inspire in them the transformation that their deepest yearning actually is, right? And I think the reach or the audience or the plays or the downloads or whatever it is the effect. But if you stand in cause, if you stand in service, if you stand in that alignment to that greatest expression of who you are, then it will come whether you have those numbers or not, right? Because it could hit one person in their soul in a way that moves them, that changes and catalyzes everything. Maybe like your chiropractor did for your children, right? Your two girls that realize something in that moment, they transcend it. And then who knows? What if they didn't transcend that? What if it then became evidence to them that fear is something that could collapse a potential future for them. That one moment in time could be the model for them, that they recognize that level up to the next one, to the next one, is actually not just probable and possible, it's actually their birthright. And I think that's also a part of it, right? Where it's like, I don't do that either. I don't even look at a lot of our numbers, because I just know. I just know that the deepest part of how we're meant to serve in the way that we communicate with people in our tribe, that if I give my best every single moment of every single day, that it's actually impossible for it not to manifest as something beautiful, miraculous. Mm. But I would say normal. I wish that was just our normal, right? You know.
I want to ask you a question, because it's something that I've said from pretty much day one, that modern medicine and natural medicine or natural therapies, ancient wisdom, need to live harmoniously hand in hand. That to me is holistic health right there, is the capacity to not exclude anything. Perhaps even vaccines as well. I mean, I've questioned them myself, and I've still got to understand it and learn more about them. But as a doctor that's been through medical school, and you've chosen a route, I should say, how do you see these different modalities and sometimes very opposing forces, especially from potentially both sides? And is it as clear-cut as there are two sides to this, natural health and modern medicine, or natural medicine and modern medicine? Or are these lines starting to blur? And where do you think the future or the present is for right now in relation to this?
I think that they are not actually in opposition. And I use that from more of a philosophical construct, in that if we use the words holism versus reductionism, right? Reductionist medicine is, let's get really, really detailed about smaller and smaller things and the minutia of a specific diagnosis and a specific treatment or therapy for that diagnosis, right? But reductionistic view is saying that there is a kidney nephrologist and there is a renal specialist, right? There's different parts of different organ systems that have different specialists, that if it's life-saving, fantastic, wonderful. Like, we should be grateful for that model, especially if it's life-threatening and life-saving. But when you look at the worldview of holism, right? Reductionism versus holism. I hold a higher standard to people on our side of things, because we have a worldview that includes the reductionist practices, in a sense that the same thing as, like, people will say the difference between vitalistic chiropractic and self-healing, people that understand there's a vital force inside the body versus just pure mechanics. We always say the difference between vitalism and mechanism. And when you have a worldview that's expansive, then it actually obligates the providers who understand that worldview to see where reductionistic and mechanistic practices fit. And when they put people in opposition, I think it's the wrong divide, in a sense that, for me, I just usually talk about it this way. I'll say that it is wonderful that there's this compendium of labels and diagnoses and treatments of the effects of things. But there are many of us on the ancestral, the natural, the vitalistic, the self-healing side of things that understand root cause and causes of things. And so I usually just say, like, I'm not against medicine. I've never been anti-medicine. I've always been about informed consent, always about empowering people with information that often is left out, even on that reductionistic side, even though that's something that they're supposed to be experts in, that all I really care about is that they open the worldview to understand where things come from. If they can understand and just have a symbiotic relationship with their model of care, And our model of care, that they understand that there's causes, that many of those causes are actually lifestyle and environmental, right? That you should talk to people about nutrition and mindfulness and movement and their relationship with nature and their sleep or hydration, all these things that we know, if they don't have an optimal state of, could create disease patterns. It's just common sense, right? Most people get that. Then I have no problem with it. It's the fact that if you only look at the worldview, try to see and understand the world, the whole expansiveness of a holistic world through a keyhole, it's common sense that you wouldn't be able to understand it. And therefore, you would actually just be stuck in your dogma. You would be stuck in your own tiny worldview that, unfortunately, if you never open the door this way, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? It is an endless rat race and cycle that has no end to their customerhood until people wake up and realize that they don't want this side at all. They were actually looking for this side over here. And sometimes they never go back because they realize that their body can heal itself for free. It's like breathing is free. If you teach somebody to breathe, you know, like, wow, if you teach somebody to sleep better, that's free. Like, it's crazy that we don't have a healthcare issue. We have a completely dogmatic model that is never open to the possibility that people yearn at their deepest souls to be empowered, to be seen, to be heard, to be valued, to be inspired. And all you have to do is just open the door. You just have to open the door to let people know, like, oh, that's outside of my scope, right? That's outside of my scope. I should probably send you here, right? The conventional model is like, everything's a fire. I don't know if you've ever heard this analogy before, but medicine's the fire department, right? The fire department comes when your house is on fire. They put out the fire. Thank God that they do it. But who in their right mind calls the fire department the next 911? My fire is out. Can you come back to rebuild my home? Like, no one would call back the fire department to put out a fire that's already put out. They would call the plumber. They would call the construction. They would call the architect. They would call maybe an electrician, you know, and that's like from acupuncture, chiropractic, naturopathy, cranial sacral therapy, energy healing, NET, all these different modalities that are the people that would rebuild your home after the fire's out. But maybe you could actually just go to them and prevent fires from happening. But medicine has convinced us that fires are spontaneous, right? Fires just happen. It's just a matter of time. It's random chance. It's no real cause or effect, actually just genetically made that way. All houses are meant to burn. And it's like, in our world, we're like, no, like, that just doesn't make logical sense. It doesn't make biological sense that if a species is forwarding, then maybe we actually have better genetic adaptability if a species is continuing to persist on the planet. And maybe we could reinforce in them that those old dogmas and those old belief systems that actually don't serve you from a health perspective may save your life, right? Need to go away. Or maybe not need to go away, but just need to recognize that there's a whole other worldview out there that we need to look at. I encourage the natural providers to understand that it's not black or white. It's not me against them. It's recognizing that we have a worldview that fits that model. I can't expect the medical doctor in my family sometimes to understand the expansiveness of the worldview that I have because it doesn't fit in their keyhole. Does that make sense? Sorry, that might have been a little bit.
Well, it was probably the best explanation I've ever heard, Stan. So thank you. I awesome. Love it. I hadn't heard the fire analogy before, so thank you. May I borrow, keep that one?
No, you can. I actually got that from Dr. James Chestnut. He's out of Victoria, Canada. He's one of the most prolific speakers on wellness and prevention that I've ever been blessed to learn from. And so it's not mine, right? It's never ours. So please share it far and wide as much as you want.
What I found fascinating about that the analogy there is that we have been, well, when I say we, there's a general consensus out there from what I can observe is that, as you said, we spontaneously catch on fire or we degrade over time. the house that it's got a little spark already, and it will just, that spark will eventually lead to the house fire.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because we've moved into the bush, what we call in Australia the bush. Maybe not, I wouldn't say the outback, we're in the rainforest.
I really hope you enjoyed the first half of this podcast. If you'd like to listen to the rest, please visit evolvenetwork.tv. That's evolvenetwork.tv. We'll see you there.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.